My guest today is Karen Anderson, and you know her as the queen of all things tiny. She is the founder, owner, operator, legend behind Tiny Doors ATL. Tiny Doors ATL project, founded in 2014, brings literal tiny doors as public art installations all around our wonderful city. There are currently 16 doors that are mapped and marked that are free to access and wheelchair accessible all around the city, as well as a ton of other awesome commission pieces all around, including one that you can find at State Farm Arena, as well as in the Georgia Aquarium. Karen is as cool as you would expect for someone who makes really badass public artwork. She's one of the cooler people I have the privilege of knowing. Was really honored to have her come sit down, be on the show. Just a huge figure in my mind in terms of contributing to the overall public art and well-being of our community and of our city. We talk about all things tiny doors, the process of making various doors. Just talk about Karen's background, talk about, unfortunately, some vandalism and maintenance and things that come with putting out something that represents communities the way the tiny doors do. They invite you to a world of fantasy and whimsy and allow you to use your imagination and live in a miniature world, and in some cases feel miniature yourself. So you're just going to have to listen to the show to find out what that means. But Karen, thank you so much for being on the show as Tiny Doors approaches 5 years. So proud of you, so proud of Tiny Doors and what it's done for our city. And without further ado, here is my conversation with Karen Anderson, founder of Tiny Doors ATL.
At any given moment, we know what the world is feeling.
Are you wearing pajama pants to school? Why, yes, I am.
I was, in a way, elevating him. I was celebrating him.
We wanted to build a beer pong table.
No, it's the Show ATL podcast. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another episode of the Show ATL podcast, the podcast where we seek to find and highlight Atlanta's creative voice. Today, we are joined by the queen of all things tiny in Atlanta, Miss Karen Anderson of Tiny Doors ATL. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
We were just commenting on each other's respective floral shirts.
Yeah.
This afternoon when you came up, and compliments exchange, but talking about the fact that not always a compliment when all you wear is floral shirts like what I wear generally. But in fact, I'm a little bit more dressed up for our interview today than I usually am. I'm usually in like a tank top or a t-shirt and a baseball cap because, I don't know, it's just like some artist who I'm buddies with that comes in. And not to discount anyone else who's been on the show. I love everyone who I've ever talked to, but I've been wanting to interview you for a long, long time. I'm very flattered that
That's
you came
kind.
In. So I dressed up a little bit and ditched the baseball hat. But
Well, I'm sure it would have been great either way. And I'm excited that we both got the memo on the spring floral shirts.
Indeed. It's a beautiful day outside. I hope to not keep you too long. I know you're extremely busy. But just jumping right into it for people who don't know what Tiny Doors is. If you're from Atlanta, you must be living under a rock if you don't know what Tiny Doors is. But Tiny Doors is literally 6 or 7, right? Mm-hmm. 6-inch tall doors that are installed strategically throughout the city in a way that reflects kind of the neighborhood, the culture, the scene of the placement of the door, right?
I mean, yeah, that's a great description. That's a really good way to put it, because you got the literal part. Literally, it is very tiny.
Right.
It's 1 inch to 1 foot. So the size varies. So if a door that, you know, you would be looking at here is like 6.5 feet tall, it would be a 6.5-inch door.
Got it. Okay.
So if it's representing, you know, a 9-foot kind of big door at a theater, it's going to be a 9-inch door, but they average about 7 inches.
Okay. So interesting that you proportionally scale it exactly to what the dimensions relative to the space and the environment for the door need to be.
Right. I mean, sometimes I fudge it a little bit.
You know, sure,
at the Atlanta History Center, that door, I think, is 25 feet tall.
Damn.
At the Swan House, the facade. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And it is that I couldn't, a 24-inch door is not even a tiny door. That's like a medium-sized door. So I had to really shrink that one. It's not exactly to scale.
Yeah, yeah. So I guess in a nutshell, why tiny doors? Because I need to just preface this, that you have become, the project started in 2014. And since that time, you have become, in at least the urban Atlanta community, especially in the arts community, a very kind of public and well-known name, yourself and the brand that you have created with Tiny Doors. I mean, it's grown spectacularly, and we're going to get into some of the recent commission work you've done and how that brand has grown and how you've expanded beyond doors and things like that. But yeah, why doors? Have you always loved the idea of little things and making little things?
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so nobody who has known me my whole life, my family, my old friends, is surprised at all that this is my job. They are all like, oh yeah, of course you found some weirdo job to do where you make tiny things all day. Yeah, when I was little, I made my own dollhouse furniture. I was really into miniatures, some only child stuff where you get really micro about like managing everything you possibly can. That's what's fun about miniatures is that it gives kind of everyone a sense of control and also wonder. And I think that for childhood, that has a lot of impact. Mm. I really enjoy it. And then later in life, I was a musician. I joined a band, you know, and I got to know street art a lot more than I ever thought I would have. So I toured the country for years and really enjoyed seeing the street art in the community in every community that I was in.
Right, right.
It was really cool. And then when I was in my 20s, I lived in Ann Arbor, Michigan, and in Ann Arbor, there were some fairy doors that started popping up. And I enjoyed seeing the fairy doors around town, but it didn't really speak to me. And it sounds weird to say it that way.
Right.
I liked them, but it didn't feel like it was for me because I'm not, you know, fairies and gnomes and elves wasn't really part of what I was interested in, especially in my 20s.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was into punk rock and like, I don't know, whatever I thought was cool probably wasn't. And then the fairy doors, you know, I just like, I liked the miniature aspect. I liked the public art aspect, but I was like, yeah, you know, let's just kind of put it on the back burner. And then I left art school, or left the band to go to art school.
Okay.
And I went to Rutgers and made custom sculptural cakes when I was there and got back into sculpting.
Cakes?
As a side job.
Okay.
While I was in art school. So I studied painting, photography, and made sculptural cakes. And then...
And you were touring in a punk rock band for how many years?
4.5.
Okay. And you... I already know the answer to this, but you played...
Bass.
Okay.
Yes.
Cool.
And so then... But you know what's funny about the band is like, I really enjoyed being in the band. And also when it was time, my turn to write a song, I had this kind of feeling of like, uh-oh, like they're all so good at this.
Mm.
This comes so naturally to them. And it was really kind of a challenge for me. It's not how my brain works all day, every day. I don't think about writing songs and music. And I saw them do it. And I knew that that was so... That was their language. They were fluent in it. And it wasn't what I was fluent in, even though I loved it.
So did you have an idea then what your language was?
I kind of always knew it was sculpture.
Okay.
I just didn't want to admit it because it's this weird thing that people do, maybe to themselves and maybe to other people, about how art isn't real. It isn't a career.
Mm, sure. Yeah.
And
that's the classic kind of tale that people tell about art. Yeah.
Right. And so, of course, the thing I'm good at shouldn't be the thing I do. Like, you know, it wasn't any safer to go into music, but for some reason I was the most afraid of sculpture.
Is it because that you had kind of overinvested this idea of passion into sculpture, that this is something that you care about? And so the stakes of failure
were that much higher? Yeah, you might be right. I hadn't really put it together like that, but I think you're right. You know, with music, I got lucky that I was in the same band for 4.5 years. It was, let's, a miracle, and it speaks to the talent of my bandmates for sure. But then, you know, after art school, I moved to Atlanta.
Right.
And promptly, like 2 months after graduating, I moved here.
Really? Okay.
Yeah. And I fell in love with the Krog Tunnel, with Atlanta as a whole, but I live near the Krog Tunnel, which is a 100-year-old train yard underpass that's full of street art all day, every day. It always smells like spray paint or something more nefarious. and it's, you know, it's this wonderful ongoing conversation. And that was where I had the idea to jump in with a tiny door.
Mm. Okay. So Krog Tunnel was door number one.
Yes.
Okay. So backtracking a little bit, just going into art school, did you know, clearly you knew the music wasn't the final thing.
Right.
It wasn't the ultimate calling. But did you know what kind of art you wanted to go into going to art school? Did you have an idea of what that might have lent itself to as a career?
No, I studied painting and photography.
Okay.
And you know what's funny is that I'm glad I honed my skills, because this job making tiny doors involves a ton of photography and a ton of painting.
Yeah, I would imagine.
And,
so,
you know, the sculpture kind of came naturally to me, but those two things, I'm really glad I studied them.
Yeah.
And so running the Instagram is all, you know, it's all photography. And then working on any of the things, I did faux painting at the children's hospital yesterday to try
cool.
and blend this tiny door to the rocks.
Yeah.
My assistant likes to say that if I were a superhero, my power would be color matching.
Not a bad skill to have.
She's like, I think that might be your superpower.
And random.
Like,
okay. But it's nice to
I'll take it.
Be recognized superhero status for something that you do.
I'm still paying off that ability. You know, I spent years honing it, but I'm glad I studied those things because they,
right.
I never would have imagined the way that I use them. So to answer your question, no, I didn't know
Fair.
What
yeah.
I wanted to do with it, but I'm glad that I developed the skills that I did because I use them.
And what brought you to Atlanta? I mean, did you just drop a pin on the map and say, I want to go down south, or did something bring you to town?
So I came here for love. I came here because I met someone who is now my wife when she sold me a t-shirt at a show when she was on the road with a band in New Jersey.
Okay.
And then she had founded Girls Rock Camp here in Atlanta as her master's thesis. And she was the director of that for a long time. So I came down in the summer to teach bass at Girls Rock Camp and fell for all of it. Her, Atlanta, everything. I was like, okay.
That's cool.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah. I'm glad.
Great story. I'm glad I asked that, because I actually didn't know that. But the tiny door, did it evolve organically, or did you know, you mentioned Krog Tunnel, did you know that you wanted to contribute to the public art scene? And
yes.
then you just kind of, so I guess from a trajectory perspective, did you know you wanted to contribute somehow but didn't know how? Or did you know, based on the fairy doors that you had experienced and seen in Ann Arbor, that that was going to be the thing that you were going to do, and then you were just kind of trying to find a place for it?
It went from one to the other. It went from me being like, okay, this is an incredible opportunity to participate in street art. Like, it doesn't get better than the Krog Tunnel. So
right.
I just want to join in. I just want to join in the conversation. And then I thought about, you know, I had, my minor was art history. So I really enjoyed, you know, looking at other artists and that sort of historical, like, reflect and respect narrative. And that being, you know, reflect what's around you, respect what's around you, and do what's true to you. And that was where I was like, okay, you know, it is true to me to work in miniature.
Mm-hmm.
And I love to sculpt. And I have seen how the fairy doors work. So I wonder if I could change it and make it about people and community.
Right.
And reflecting and respecting rather than, and I have later interviewed the person who started the fairy doors in Ann Arbor and asked him.
That's cool.
How the project got started and what his mission was. And he was talking to me about, you know, community and also about creating space for fairies, for people to imagine another culture within their culture, which I thought was really cool and interesting and not at all what I'm trying to do. So it was nice that we had a different mission. You know, it is as different as I think it is, even though we work in the same scale and we
right.
both make doors.
Right.
You know, this really happened 20 years later also. Not 20 years, I'm not that old. But, you know, it happened a chunk of time later when social media was around.
Yeah.
And you can use, I studied social media for artists in college, which is a super valuable class. And so I use the hashtag. And that was kind of part of it. I knew I wanted to do a tiny door, try it out, kind of brought in a friend named Sarah, and we thought together about what the name should be. She's an Atlanta local, and I wanted to keep it really local.
Yeah.
And not impose too much of, like, they're not Tiny Doors by Karen. Even though my artist name is Tiny Doors ATL, everything you see is made by me.
Right.
It's not Doors by Karen. It's Tiny Doors ATL. It's something else entirely.
Right.
It's for you, and it's about the city. It's not about me.
So the first door, what was it? What did it represent, the first door that went up?
It looked like the Krog Tunnel. So it was a wooden door, which I have learned so many lessons about that since then. But it was a wooden door that looked like the Krog Tunnel. It had like my best rendition of tiny spray paint. Mm-hmm. It said Krog on the front.
That's cool.
In sort of a tag style. And I, for a while, had the tradition of using a found item as the stoop. Mm-hmm. Like whatever I could find as I was installing. So I found a little piece of cement that had broken off, made a stoop out of it. And just put the little hashtag Tiny Doors ATL down the side. Okay. Not at that point as a signature. Mm, only as a way for people to find each other.
Interesting. Okay.
There was no Instagram.
Yeah.
For the first 6 months.
Hmm. Interesting.
It was just about a way for people to find each other.
Yeah.
And see the tags that other people had made.
Interesting. Okay. So you had no aspirations of this becoming like a brand.
Nope.
At that time. It was just, let me contribute to this already vibrant, growing art scene, this public art scene in Atlanta.
Yeah, absolutely. I did not buy a van before I had a band.
Yeah. Great analogy. Great analogy.
I definitely just started in a very sort of unassuming, let's just try this. I was trying at that point to launch another brand. I had this thing where I was making these. I don't talk about this very often, but it's true. I was trying to make these mailable slices of cake, but they were like fake sculptures of cake. They're really cool. I should have brought you one. They're really fun.
No, I'm sorry. Sponges. Just mailable cake, like not real cake.
No, it's fake, but it totally looks real.
Okay. Well, the idea of mailing actual slices of cake to me is kind of funny.
It is really funny, and they'd have to be really stale. So these were like sponges that I sprayed specifically to look like cake, used caulk to make it like... Yeah. You know, and I was really careful about all those details. And I had cards printed for the back. So it would look like when you open your mailbox, like there was just a fresh slice of cake sitting there. It's really like disarming and kind of awesome. And so I had this thing called Let Them Send Cake.
Oh, I love that.
That was this brand that I was actively launching. I was working on copyrights and, you know, patents for the design. And, you know, all of this is what I was working on when I just put up a tiny door.
Okay, so this was just like, let me take a break from this thing that is actually consuming my waking hours, this thing I'm trying to build. Mm-hmm. And this was pure fun. This was just like, let me express my creative ambition to contribute to my city, to contribute to my community through this door. And you started this in 2014 with, you mentioned, Atlanta local Sarah Mang. Am I saying that right? Okay. And have since just blown up. So it's been, going on five years now?
Yeah, almost 5 years.
5 years. Incredible. And you, I mean, I don't want to at all diminish the impact of Tiny Doors, but in fact, this is somewhat really playing up and enhancing the impact, but you don't have that many doors out there.
Yeah. I take that as a compliment and I love that you know that. So I'm kind of into stories to get to the point. So I hope that's all right with you, but
please. Absolutely.
One of my favorite things now, but something that really bothered me back in the day, was when I spend a lot of time just sitting and working on the doors. Just sitting on the belt line with my hands in the dirt. I used to try to maintain real plants there, but then they started spraying pesticides. I can't do it anymore. So, you know, I spend a lot of time touching up the rainbow, replacing the door, just keeping it nice.
Right.
Especially
the rainbow being door number two.
Door number two by the skate park is I've spent, I don't even know, hundreds of hours.
Really?
Yeah. And so I've heard all the things people say over 5 years walking by. And I don't know why they don't think I can hear them, but I can. And they'll walk by and, you know, say things like, oh, yeah, that's the Tiny Doors. They're everywhere. They're all over Atlanta.
Mm.
And I'm like, no, they're not.
Right.
You know, and in my head, I'm arguing like there are only six.
Yeah.
Like they don't take up any space at all. And, you know, and then I was like, oh, they're. After years of hearing this, there are only to date right now 16. That's it. 5 years in, 16 doors.
And that includes the commission pieces?
No.
Okay.
Those are on the map doors.
Got it.
That you could go find right now. You could find 16. So with all of those, you know, what I'm, it's funny to think about, why would they say they're everywhere?
Right.
They also say they're hidden, and none of them are hidden. They're very in plain sight. They're just small, and anything small seems hidden. But it's kind of like saying your cat is hidden. It's like, no, it's right there.
Right, yeah.
It's just small. So with the doors, it's funny because it gave me this moment because I realized when someone tells you something about yourself, which is what this felt like, mm-hmm. you know, and they keep hearing the same thing from different people all the time. You're like, something about this is true, and I'm missing it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had to step back and go, what about this they're everywhere is true and I'm missing it? Because they take up less space than most kitchen tables.
Yeah.
Except for door 658, which we'll get to later.
Sure, yeah.
But it's they're very small. And I realized that it's a presence thing, that they were having a way bigger impact than mm-hmm. their square footage. Because if you're walking down the Beltline and you walk 2 miles, you're probably going to see two or three of them.
Right.
And then if you go home and you're looking at Instagram, you know, there are 18,000 uses of the hashtag.
Yeah.
You're going to see it at some point. And that makes it feel like it's everywhere. You've right. seen it four times today now.
Right.
You right. know, so I was like, oh, it's a presence issue, or not an issue, but like, that's what it was about.
Yeah.
People were feeling like it was everywhere. And after I had that realization that it was me who was missing something and not them, I was like, well, that's cool. Because that gives me permission to go slowly. If you already feel like it's everywhere,
right?
I don't need to make 10 a year. I can make 2.
Yeah.
Or 3. Or replace the old ones and, you know, keep it alive rather than try to just expand it into infinity.
Right.
And so that's what I've tried to do, is keep it really special.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know, for lack of a better word.
you have. I think that the brand Tiny Doors and the experience of Tiny Doors has created something much bigger than the actual square footage of the doors. Now, that being said, how much, like a ratio of your time, how much is spent on maintaining, well, I guess a couple things, maintaining the doors that are physically in existence,
mm-hmm.
coming up with and building new doors, and then as like a tertiary item, just maintaining the brand digitally?
That's a really good question. I've never been asked that question before. Spoken like somebody who runs a couple things at once.
Yeah, well, you could say that, but this is not about me.
I know, but I know you do that, and that's how you know to ask that question. That's a good one. So it's really, a lot of my time is devoted to thinking about and growing the brand and the doors. They're kind of tied together because the doors are all free to visit. They're all public. Mm-hmm. They're all wheelchair accessible. You know, there are things about this that I think people might not realize when they're looking at it, what they're looking at. But I try to just stay true to that. And so I spend a lot of time fielding phone calls, fielding ideas, you know, and I really like to think about how this could grow and take it in the right direction.
Right.
So about half my time is spent in meetings or making proposals or talking to people about what could happen. And then it's kind of split between making and maintaining.
Okay. What's the typical maintenance diagnosis? I mean, is it usually just weather and time, or is there an aspect of vandalism to it? I mean, I'm sure over the years you've kind of seen it all, but what, now that the brand has grown mm-hmm. and people are aware of it, I assume there's less, I would hope there's less vandalism, mm-hmm. but I don't know. I mean, what?
I'm making a bunch of faces. I'm sorry.
No, that's okay.
It doesn't really translate to a podcast.
Well, I mean, I'm asking kind of a sensitive subject because these are your babies. And
yeah,
I'm asking you to relive moments of seeing something that you've built and put out into the world damaged or destroyed or vandalized. But, you know, I've actually seen you out on the Beltline mm-hmm. and in places, and I've seen your social media and website of you sitting out with your little retro suitcase that's got Tiny Doors ATL painted onto it with your kit, sitting down, spending a lot of time,
mm-hmm.
you know, either installing or maintaining.
Mostly maintenance.
Yeah. So what do you typically see maintenance-wise that you need to...
So I prepare. What I do is I make the door out of wood and clay and any number of things. And then I have it cast by a local mold maker. And she makes a mold of the door and then casts it in resin for me. And then I paint it and put it out. So every single door you see is a resin replica of an original.
Got it. So the
except
door
for like very early doors.
Right.
They're all resin now.
So when you say the original created by you, which is inspired by something. So
door number six is the only exception to that. But yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So they're made by me. And then like the new one at State Farm Arena is a good example. So I was trying to emulate the front of the arena. It says Atlanta on the front of the arena. So I made it say ATL. And that became the architecture that surrounds this door. And that was really fun, but there's no way that all those little intricate details would survive on the street. That entire installation is one piece.
It's
the biggest single piece that we've ever done. And so she had to make a mold and she tried like 8 or 9 different times to get it to all come out perfectly.
Right.
Because it's glass and wood and all these things that are faux because it's all one single cast. And so
that's really cool.
I prepare. Thank you.
Yeah.
I prepare by doing that. So I make it out of one single piece.
Right.
And then when it goes out on the street, I try to prepare it for the elements as much as I can. So they're all waterproof. You know, they're all kickproof. Most of them don't have real hardware on them anymore. I build it into the mold and then make it gold or silver or whatever I need it to be. And then they're replaceable. So if something happens and it gets damaged, I fully replace it.
Okay. Okay.
So what you've seen me doing actually is sitting out there, taking it all apart and putting a new door in its place. It just doesn't look like it's been replaced because it's an exact replica.
Right. Okay.
So it does happen. The rainbow door sees a lot of homophobia.
Really?
Yeah. And it's hard for me because as a queer person, it feels personal. It feels like, you know, my childhood with people being terrible about it.
Yeah. I mean, in that location, that bothers me. Because,
it does.
I mean,
it does.
I mean, it exists. Of course, it's a reality that
but
we
you are right in the heart of Midtown Atlanta.
Yeah.
And it is, but it's an easy target for that, I guess.
Mm.
You know, because people are already walking around with paint markers and spray paint and rocks or whatever business they have, and they're expecting to leave their mark.
Yeah.
And that's a very clear symbol. It's just, you know, it's right in their faces. And so I actually have for internal use only reel of photos I've taken of all the damage that door has sustained.
Really?
Over 5 years. Because one day I was starting to feel crazy. I was like, am I nuts or does that door take a lot of vandalism?
It takes a lot of hits.
Yeah. And I put all of the photos into like iMovie.
Yeah.
And just let them each, you know, roll for 2 seconds. And I was like, oh, wow. Like that's depressing. I can't let anybody see that. But it was nice for me to see how much love I've put into that door.
Mm-hmm.
And if you compare statistically the amount of hatred versus the amount of love that door has gotten, it's still almost nothing. You know, for every 1,000 times it's tagged, like maybe one thing happens. It's almost never.
Yeah. It's hard though to see the forest for the trees when it comes to this hateful speech. I mean, it has such a bigger impact for every 100.
It does.
You know, it's, hashtags, you know, and nice things. The one derogatory, defamatory mean thing. It cuts very deeply.
It does. And I have to sit there in it.
Yeah.
You know, I have to sit there and cover over nasty words and, you know, replace doors. And that part of it has been tough. But there are other doors that doesn't happen to.
Right.
You know, there's one on the west side and it's the only door on the west side. And I did it in conjunction with a local school.
Okay.
And it's in conjunction with the local KIPP Academy.
Yep.
And nobody messes with that door.
Really?
And I don't know if it's because they have so much respect for tiny doors, but I know it's because they have so much respect for KIPP Academy.
Right. Right.
You know, that door gets nothing but love.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it's just every door is so different that I just have to, you know, sometimes people say when they have kids, like one needs way more attention than the other ones. Like,
right.
That's door two.
Right.
It just needs a lot of attention.
It's also the most, I guess, forward-facing door. Like you are, when you're in the direction of walking south on the East Side Trail, you are looking at it head-on, as opposed to some of the other doors are to your side. You have to look left or right.
That's a good point.
Or go to a specific place to see it. That one you are looking.
But if you're looking straight at it, you have to cross the trail to get to it.
Right. Yes. Right. So, well, good point. But I'm sorry that one has seen.
Oh, that's okay. You know, I feel a little more comfortable talking about it now than I used to.
Right.
You know, it's I talked to a friend when things got a little bananas. I think it was a year and a half ago. I was on Instagram.
Okay.
Which was an unbelievable moment. But then also another big publication put out a piece within 24 hours of each other. And I have a friend who's been a rock star for a really long time. And I called her and I was like, I just need help. Like, how do you handle all of this attention or whatever it is coming at you, positive, negative? And she was like, here's what you do. You just find the one thing you love about your job.
Right.
Do more of that. Do as much as you can of that and pick one thing, just one, that you dislike, that you can't handle or that you hate, and don't do it.
Yeah.
Or do very little of it. Get it down to as little as you can. And she's like, literally everything else is just your job. Don't worry about how you feel about it. Just do it.
Interesting. Yeah. It's tough. It's tough though when you pour so much of yourself into creating things.
So I had to think about what I love.
Yeah.
And what I hate, and figure out where sitting in front of a broken door and repairing it fits in. And I, you know what? I love it.
I think the labor of love that goes into the maintenance of all of these doors is really the heart and ethos of what Tiny Doors is. It's not volume. It's not proliferation. It is the care that each one of these doors gets. So my favorite tiny door is the one that you commissioned at the Georgia Aquarium. The penguin door. Penguins are my favorite animals.
They are?
By far have always been my favorite animals. I watch anything penguin related on, like, you know, these animal shows, the movies they create.
Why are they your favorite?
I don't know. They're just like so like funny looking. They're just like so dorky. Like, they're this like very strong, well, several reasons. A, they're a very strong and resilient animal. They live in one of the harshest climates.
Yeah.
I'm talking about the emperor penguin, like the Gentoo penguin, some of these more resilient species. They live in some of the harshest environments known to man. They spend an inexplicable amount of time just keeping themselves from dying from their surrounding environment. Right. They just,
right.
Most of their time is just spent not dying from the cold.
Right. I'm from Michigan. I kind of understand.
Yeah. And then the other thing is that the parenting style of penguins is so, it's such a powerful testimony to mating and parenthood in the animal kingdom, because these penguins pair up for a mating season and they take equal care to raise their chicks. So when the egg is hatched, the father penguin will actually sit on the egg for 3 months without eating, while the mom, who had been, you know, laying the egg for a period of time, goes and feeds, and the dads literally just sit on these eggs for months. And then the chick hatches, the mom comes back, they transfer the chick over, and then the dad's gone for another 2 months feeding. And then they just kind of do this back and forth every season, every mating season.
That's amazing.
And over half these chicks don't even survive. Now, that being said, that's kind of on the resilience and strength of penguins.
Well, that's how you keep your population maintained. Otherwise, it would like explode.
Exactly. But that's on the one hand. On the other hand, they're just really damn cute.
Yeah, they're super cute.
And they're just like so dorky, because under the water, they're these speed stealth torpedoes. They're these like hunting machines. But on land, they're just like waddling around. They're very clumsy. They're very dorky.
Oh, I like it.
I don't know. They're this like balance of like really powerful, strong, resilient animal, but like they're just really cute and funny on the surface. You don't see any of that stuff that makes them powerful and strong.
I think that's true. I think that, you know, I think people can identify with that too, because everybody's got like their superpower, you know, that thing they're really good at that you might not be able to see on the surface, but you know, that's hidden in everybody, or it's right in your face. But, you know, I feel like a lot of people can identify with the penguin in that way.
I love the penguin, and I love that door. So
thanks.
So how did that door come to be? And through that story and example, how did the world of Tiny Door commissions come to be? Because now you've got, so 16 non-commissioned works, but how many commissioned works beyond that?
I don't know. Yeah. It's kind of a lot.
Yeah, I would imagine.
But I did one yesterday at the Children's Hospital.
Okay.
That was really fun.
Yeah.
So, you know, if I had done this project differently, the Children's Hospital would be on the map. It would just be a map of all the work. But I decided that they all needed to be free and public and accessible. And that's not public. It's at a private hospital. So I want them to be kind of collectible.
Okay.
You know, that you can go see them all. So with the aquarium, it was the first one that was a little bit outside of my mission statement.
Okay.
Which is that with the aquarium, you have to pay to see it.
Mm.
So that door is not numbered, but it is on the map because I highly recommend going to see this door.
Right.
So they called me and they were like, we want a door. You know, how can we figure this out? And I got really excited to go and see, and they gave me a tour and we talked about all these spaces, and they kept showing me spaces where you couldn't see any fish from there,
which makes
sense because the tanks, you know, are huge. And we ended up doing a spot right next to the largest tank, but it's still in the big lobby. So you can see the door and you can see whale sharks at the same time.
That's cool.
So cool.
Yeah.
And so what I do when people ask for a commission is I go to the space, I look at it, I take photos, I pretend I'm taking a selfie with a door, but I'm taking a selfie with a wall, so I look really silly for a minute.
Right.
And then I edit into that.
The door.
The door.
Okay. Very
cool. And so for them, I spent a long time thinking about, their space is so organic. You don't think about it when you're at the aquarium, but there really aren't square anythings or rectangular doors.
No, it's not. Yeah.
You know, it's a very organic space. It's the largest aquarium in North America, and they thought very carefully about how the space looks.
Yeah, well done. It's very well done.
It's beautiful. Yeah. So I decided that this would be the time. If I was ever going to make a round door, this was going to be the round door.
Okay.
Because on land, it looks like a hobbit door.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, the round had to be saved for a very special occasion, and I felt like the aquarium was that occasion. And so it's a round door surrounded by coral. Mm-hmm. And it has rounded steps leading up to it. And that's because they polish the floor for like 4 hours every night. And
really?
It needed to be raised and rounded so the floor polishers wouldn't like buff off the corners.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Yeah.
So you really thought this through about
everything.
I had to because it's
a museum that sees so many people. So it is the same material as an outdoor installation.
Okay.
It's, you know, it's a resin replica.
Right.
Because it is bulletproof. And I actually built that wall out of epoxy resin. I built it out to hold the door rather than cutting into the museum so that I could use really high quality, very durable, I want to say kickable, well, for lack of a better word.
With as many kids that go through there,
right. It
needs to be.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I had two people helping me put it in. We were there for 3 or 4 hours at night installing this door. And it was 1:30 in the morning and we all stood up and I said, okay, guys, don't watch. And they turned around and they heard me kick it and they just went, no. And I was like, listen, if it can't get kicked, we have to start over.
Right.
Because
right.
it's going to get kicked.
Yeah.
Either on purpose or accidentally or hit with a stroller or something. And if it falls apart, we did it wrong.
Well,
and they were like, okay.
Well, it has to, I imagine it's taken you a while to get to the point where you're comfortable kicking the door.
Yeah.
Right. You have grown with your product.
Right. It has to be durable. I don't want to make something. And like, it's not as though I sit there going, well, I'm going to make this so those vandals can't take it. I look at it like, I'm going to make this strong so that nobody accidentally breaks it and feels bad.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's what I said to the Children's Hospital. I was like, listen, you're getting a push door.
Yeah.
Because if I put knobs on here and some kid breaks it, they're going to feel bad.
Right.
And they were like, oh, that's a good point. And actually, the aquarium does not have a knob.
Really?
You don't think it when you look at it.
But yeah.
I decided because it was going to get touched so much, not to give the touching a focal point.
Fair, fair.
So it just gets touched pretty equally all over the place, but it doesn't have a knob.
I love that. And now
fish don't have hands, so it doesn't matter. They don't need a knob.
Now that's not your only round door, right? You have another round door in Grant Park. Is that right? On a tree?
No. That door is still a square, like a regular sized door.
Okay. I guess it was just the visual surroundings of it being so in the root base of this tree.
The door structure around it.
Yeah.
I did some clapboard to make it look like the front of a house, and that's really an organic shape fit into the tree. Yeah, but the door itself is still a pretty standard, you know, dollhouse style door.
And I saw a video online after you had installed that of you opening the door and there being like, it was like some sort of animal.
Yeah, there's all kinds of stuff in there.
Nested inside the tree, inside that door.
There's, you know, a lot of ants, but I find all kinds of like, right? I find all kinds of things in there, like money and action figures.
Really?
And yeah. People leave each other stuff. And that was part of, so I only put doors where they're invited.
Mm-hmm.
And Grant Park invited Tiny Doors to do a door. And I met with them. I met with their city council person, Carla Smith. I met with some other peeps, some business owners. And they were like, you know, Grant Park is a very like share a cup of sugar neighborhood. Yeah. It's a very like giving neighborhood. And they also said it's very divided by the actual Grant Park.
Sure. Yeah.
And they were like, so if you do one on the east side, you have to do one on the west side, or you have showed favoritism. And I was like,
interesting. You can just do it in the middle of the park.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. I was interested in doing the east side, west side sort of thing. So one of them is by the fountain where the farmer's market is.
Mm-hmm.
And that's on the west side of the park. And then one of them is in a tree on the east side of the park. And I got to incorporate that give and take.
Yeah. I love that.
That's the way that Grant Park can leave things for each other. And Grant Park, the neighbors of that park decorate those doors all the time. I don't decorate them.
Really?
And they are decorated for just about every holiday. It's awesome.
That's cool.
Yeah. I love it.
So really inviting the community to take part.
These are theirs.
Yeah.
They look just like their doors. Mm. You know, they're really inspired by the architecture of Grant Park. And I replace them and take care of them. And one day, one of them came loose. And somebody said, the door's loose, sent me a text. And so I went, and it was because it's on like granite and I'm not used to working with granite.
I see.
It was very hot. So I went and removed the door for the night to, you know, rethink it and go put it back in the morning. And late that night, I got an email from city council and they were like, are you okay? Is the door okay? I was like, wow.
That's cool.
That's a big deal for a little 7-inch piece of resin.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
And it made me feel good, but it also reminded me of the responsibility to take care of this.
Sure. Yeah. Random kind of side question. Do all the doors open?
Nope. Okay. Just the one in Grant Park opens inward.
Got it.
So what I like to say about them is that they open to your imagination. And I know it sounds a little bit like a cop-out, but here's the story that backs up my claim. So I was sitting next to door number 2, the rainbow door, early on. And a couple, I don't even know how many, 5-year-olds came up to me and they were like, hey, is this yours? And I said, yeah. And they were like, why doesn't it open? And I said, okay. And I had to think as fast as I could. I was like, okay, close your eyes and imagine what's behind the door. And so they did. And I said, now tell me, if this door opened, what could you see that's more amazing than what you just imagined? And one little kid said, nothing. I was like, thank you. Yeah, that's what I think too.
That's cool.
Is that there's nothing more amazing than your imagination.
Mm.
And I'm certainly not trying to impose anything on your imagination by having it open to what, a mural on a piece of cement?
Right.
You know, then it becomes just as much about what's behind it as what's in front of it. And to me, the behind it is your imagination and the in front of it is your neighborhood and your neighbors.
Yeah.
That's the switch that I
love that. I really do. I do love that because you do, on another interview that you had done, you mentioned that the goal is to bring wonder to tiny spaces. And on your own website, you describe it as an invitation to whimsy.
Mm-hmm.
And so it really does invite the viewer and the audience and the community to make it their own. You're not imposing, this is what Karen thinks the door should lead to. This is, you know, it's for everyone that comes in. Now, back on the topic of growth, your brand has grown, your reach has grown, your presence in Atlanta has grown, but your studio has not grown. And
this is a thing I will not forget. Yeah, my studio is 8x8.
So tell me about why not move to a bigger space? Tell me about the studio and what it means to you and how it influences your work and why. It's 8x8.
It's 8x8 because that is the amount of space my loft has. So I live in a loft with my wife, and then up a ladder is a little 8x8 sort of nook that overlooks our house. And so it has a half wall and an HVAC closet behind it.
Nice.
And that is where everything is made. And it really is. I have an assistant who helps me part time, and she and I have spent a lot of time just making it as efficient as humanly possible.
Sure.
It is extremely efficient.
Yeah.
Down to where we keep the doorknobs. But I just did a big project and we're experiencing a lot of overflow because I had to overbuy because I didn't know what I would need. And
right.
It's like, you know, if you can imagine trying to put your career on your kitchen table, and it's kind of like that.
Yeah. I mean, literally speaking, my career kind of is on my kitchen table right now. We're doing this podcast.
And so I understand that. It's really nice though to test myself in that way. You know, it's a constant reminder to keep it organized, to, you know, stay on task. I can't have two projects going at once. And I think if I did, I might not be as good at managing my time. It's really forced me to stay with one project until it's done, get it out of the studio, get it to the mold maker, and be done.
Do you, I have trouble staying on one thing from idea, conception, to all the way through completing execution. Are you someone who struggles with that as well, or have you gotten it, you know, down to some sort of art science combination where you were able to stay with something comfortably?
You know, I think I'm one of those people who has that sort of undiagnosed ADHD.
Yeah.
The kind that you just got C's and B's because that was what you already knew before you started that class.
Right, right.
But you weren't paying attention. Somebody complimented my fancy handwriting the other day, and I said, yeah, that's what I did in eighth grade science. I made up a font. You know, so no, I don't stay on task, but I have set up my life in such a way that I can sort of flip around and, and do things. But when you're working with clients, like I do a lot, it's a lot of start and stop.
Right.
And so, you know, I made a pitch to, well, I did a proposal for State Farm Arena when it was Phillips Arena, a year and a half, 2 years before the actual door came in. And so I was excited about that design 2 years before I got to make it. And I couldn't do it before they said go.
Right.
And that was the tough part, is like that. Right now I have a skateboard that I've been building a tiny little door and scene on, and I've had to stop to work on other projects. And I looked to my assistant today and I said, that's my treat for myself on Sunday. When I'm done with all this other administrative, sending invoices and, you know, responding to emails, I'm going to finish that skateboard. She's like, dream big.
So is that going to be another numbered door on the map then in time?
Nope. It's going to go in a gallery near here at ABV Gallery for a show.
Awesome.
I'm really excited to do that because I think people think more of the painters.
Right.
For those.
Yeah.
And the illustrators who are out there do a lot of those sort of collaborative shows. And I think it's awesome that Greg Mike called me and said, hey, do you feel like you could do a skateboard? I'm like, oh yes. Like,
that's cool.
What a dream to sculpt on a skateboard. I sculpt on other random things all the time. So it was a really fun medium. I was sketching until I finally got it.
Very cool. I love it. I can't wait to see it. I'm looking forward to one that you got to let me know when the show is.
Yeah, thanks. Come to that show. I'm stoked to see what other people do. One of my favorite artists is called Chris Noosh.
Okay.
Of Noosh Studios.
Mm-hmm.
And his work is entirely carved.
Oh, nice. Okay.
And he does this like shallow carving style that can be used for block print. So he does like live block printing of shirts.
Mm.
But when he does a skateboard,
yeah,
I mean, when he does any kind of wood like that, you just look at it and can't even believe that it's a wood carving. I had him do a portrait of my cat.
That's cool.
You know, I feel like when an artist hires you to do a portrait, like that's the ultimate. I was like, I don't want a photograph. I don't want a painting.
I want my cat.
I want a wood carving by Chris Noosh.
That's awesome. A wood carving of your cat.
Yeah.
Well, I'm excited for the show. I want to quickly touch on kind of beyond the doors, right? Mm-hmm. Well, let's say beyond the tiny doors. I forget the name or number of this door, but there is a door that you have on the Beltline now that is gigantic.
It's huge.
So tell me about that door, because
that door is so much
because
fun.
It's not tiny.
What a dream. It still qualifies as a tiny door because it makes you tiny.
Okay, I like that. All right.
So it's so big that you're pretty much to scale with a tiny door. So like to a regular tiny door, mm-hmm. you're walking by and it's, you know, the height of your shin.
Yeah.
And that's a tiny door. Well, you walk up to this door and you can barely reach the handle.
Yeah.
You know, now you're tiny. The welcome mat is 8 feet long.
That's wild. You designed it clearly. Mm-hmm. How much of it did you build? Because that's a very sophisticated, large scale build.
Thank you. I will give all the props that are due for that for sure. So the door design is based off of my door in East Atlanta Village.
Okay.
So the door is a replica of one of my originals. Mm-hmm. Made by a movie production studio called Ferris Entertainment.
That's dope. Okay.
So I called Ferris Entertainment and I said, can you make me a giant door in 9 days? And they were like, yeah. And I said, here are the colors. Here's what it needs to look like. And they just started building and they made this, you know, giant metal handle. The whole thing is 14 feet tall.
That's insane.
By 8 feet wide. And then it's got, you know, planter boxes that are huge next to it. The big welcome mat, obviously. And that was really a fun challenge. And it took 7 people to put it up, not including me. I was just standing back telling them to go left and right.
Right.
But I didn't physically build that door because I don't have the capability.
Sure.
I don't have the carpenter know-how. Yeah. I had a movie production studio do it. And it really, like, as an artist, it made me feel two ways. Mm. It made me feel like, oh no, it's not my art because I didn't physically build this 14-foot door.
Right.
And then also it was like, well, Chihuly doesn't blow his own glass anymore. Like Titian had a workshop.
Yeah.
You know, like maybe it's okay. It's still my design. It's still, you know, but yeah, that was definitely, that door was hard to wrap my brain around in multiple different ways.
Yeah. But congratulations. And is that a numbered door then?
Yes. Okay. So it's door 658.
Okay.
Because it is 658 times the size of a tiny door.
I love that. Okay. You mentioned that earlier in the show, and I was wondering, I was like, I knew it was the large door, but I didn't know why it was called that.
So there's 1 through 16.
Right.
And 658.
I love it. Okay.
I just wanted to give it not a plain number. It would have been door 17, and I didn't want to make it door 17. Right. I wanted it to be its own thing.
So now will there be a 17 that follows, or will they just go to 18? Okay.
Yeah, technically there isn't a door 5 right now. It was vandalized into oblivion years ago, and so it's okay. We'll find a new home for it, but I'm waiting. There's somewhere really cool that wants it.
Yeah.
So it's, like I said, this is a really slow, deliberate project. I'm not interested in pushing anything on Atlanta or pushing the timeline. It just happens when it happens. And I try to make it, you know, happen at a pace that makes sense for Atlanta.
Yeah. I have seen you, and I know we're getting on time here, so I'm going to ask you kind of one last train of thought of questions about other tiny things.
Absolutely.
Because I've seen you at various craft shows, the Indie Craft Experience, namely, selling Christmas trees in the holidays. So you did tiny trees and you had a little scene set up, a little living room scene with a tiny tree in it. And you sold out, had lines out the door for your trees on two occasions, which phenomenal. We had a little tree delivered to our stand. We're selling
hand lamps. Of course you did. Hand lamps, of course, I'm such beautiful. A huge fan of yours. That's
Thank
no
you.
Problem.
And I've seen that you've done a little replica shoe and shoebox for Mizuno. In the past. So what other things are in the purview of the tiny universe that you were a part of?
Yeah, thanks for noticing that. I think, you know, what I'm interested in case it isn't clear, isn't doors.
Yeah.
What I'm interested in is people and an interaction and how things can have an impact. So, you know, a giant door has a huge impact on you. It's very imposing when you're standing next to it. Actually, when you see it from far away, it kind of is hard to get the idea. But when you're standing on that welcome mat and you see that the letter E is bigger than your foot, you're like, oh, wait. Mm. And so with other companies that in other places that call me and say, you know, what can you think of that we can do? Like Mizuno called and said, hey, can we have a Mizuno door? And I was like, well, of course, I'll make you something. But what about shoes? And they're like, you can do shoes? Sure. And it was a huge challenge.
I bet.
But it was so much fun because what we got to was the feeling they wanted, which was this box fresh moment.
Right.
Was that moment when you open a box of shoes and a door wasn't going to get there.
Mm.
And it's the same thing with the trees. Selling a bunch of tiny doors with Christmas themes. Frankly, you can buy resin fairy doors with wreaths on them at Michael's.
Yeah, yep, yep.
They don't have the impact.
Right.
They're for a really specific group of people. And I'm not one of those people. So I don't really have the understanding of who buys that or why.
Right.
But what I do want is a tiny little, like, no pressure Christmas tree that's got all kinds of bells and whistles and feels custom.
I mean, literally, yeah, you decorate this tree. I mean, that was your station. It was amazing. It was like a full-on, you know, build your own Christmas tree setup.
Yeah, it's a Christmas tree bar, basically,
yeah.
Where you make your own Christmas tree. And I tried to make like a scale lot so you had that experience of picking out a tree in a lot full of 2x4s with lights strung from them. And then, you get a handmade tree skirt and a handmade topper, and it's got that nostalgic feeling to it, but then you can put it in a lunch bag and walk around the rest of the craft show.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I feel like I'm the audience for that, and you might be too. So, I got that. I knew what I wanted. I knew I wanted that experience over, the think harder moments that come along when somebody goes, hey, Indie Craft Experience, you want to come play with us? And you got to think about it, which actually, credit to Indie Craft Experience, Shannon, who runs it, came to me and asked if I would be into. She's like, can you think of a way to make tiny Christmas trees?
Really?
That was her. And I was like, I can try.
Yeah. Well, she's brilliant. And she's that whole Indie absolutely. Craft, beyond just the market, it's such a great organization for
Atlanta.
They're
great people and they really respect artists. And that's why she didn't say anything else other than, hey, can you think of this? If you can, let's try it.
Right. Right.
And I'm not a vendor necessarily. I don't do other shows. I only do Indie Craft Experience because I don't have merch I want to sell. I want to make you an experience.
Yeah. Yeah. I love it. And do you make tiny things for yourself outside of the doors and trees and shoes and all of these things? Is there a tiny world that you keep to yourself?
So that little room that you just mentioned is my dollhouse that I've had since I was like a kid.
That's cool.
So that I actually bought myself another one on eBay because that one got so manhandled. It's fine, but I had to buy myself another so I could still have that little like world unto myself. It's just a little loft. It looks like a loft in New York City.
Yeah.
And I've been playing with that. I had it when I was in my 20s and all my friends would make fun of me for it, but then they would play with it.
Right.
I would come home. One time there was like a Stay Puffed Marshmallow Man. One time my little Rosie the Riveter doll was tied to the couch. It was funny. People, they still played with it.
I would. You have to love that, I'm borrowing the word from you, the whimsical experience of being able to immerse yourself in something tiny and do that as an adult and kind of take that step back into the nostalgic world of playing with. I played with dolls when I was a kid.
Yeah.
My parents were very, well, my dad didn't love it, but my mom bought me like doll related stuff because she was like, he can pick whatever toys he wants to play with. And I did that until the pressure.
Maybe that's what made you like the confident man that can wear a floral shirt and just rock it.
Maybe.
Like, that's pretty awesome.
I don't know, but it was certainly a time when I remember being embarrassed by it, right? Mm-hmm. As a kid, you go through this time when you're free and playing with dolls as a little boy, and then the pressures of the schoolyard make you rethink everything about yourself, and then you rethink everything about yourself for about 20 years, and then and then you come out either a really fucked up person or a blossoming, confident creator and
who wears floral shirts and can tell a good story.
Or who makes tiny doors and tiny worlds and
right.
ignites the imaginations of everyone that she touches. So
thank you.
Well, thank you for doing what you do. I'm excited to see whatever the next project is. And also just a completely random congratulations on a really well done door for Draper James, which is Reese Witherspoon's store. And you were actually on her blog, which I read.
Oh, that was a pleasure. They were really fun to work with.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
If you haven't seen go check out all of the tiny doors, obviously. But if you haven't seen the Draper James door, it is really, it's just very clean, precise, well executed, a very good representation of the actual Draper James storefront, which all of your doors are brilliantly executed.
Thank you. But that one was a little more literal. I will tell you an honest moment I had with that door the other day. I was on Instagram and I follow Draper James, of course, and they posted a storefront with the door open.
Yeah.
And I was like, why did they Photoshop an open door on my installation? Like, that's an odd thing to do. And it was totally not my door. It was their store with the door open.
Really?
And I had just looked at my door so much that like I got confused for a second and thought that it was my installation.
Yeah, but I mean, kudos that it was that spot on, you know, that you would think that. But
no, thanks. It was fun to see though. And I really enjoyed doing something that I, with them.
Right.
Being literal was actually the fun part.
Yeah.
You know, most of the time I liked it to be really interpretive, but the literal was what made it fun.
Yeah.
And whimsical and funny. Cause you're like, wait, I'm in here, but it's down there.
Yeah. That's cool. I love that. And with the Mizuno shoes as well. I mean, very, you know, very exact. They're as exact as you can get at that scale. But the most impressive part to me was the box and the tissue paper.
Oh,
thanks. You know, you mentioned like the unboxing of the shoe experience. Yeah. The box and the tissue paper of the Mizuno miniature was awesome.
A recipe for that. And this was something that I figured out that I'm totally cool with sharing.
Yeah.
I disassembled the box. They print shoe boxes in one piece. It's like a cutout with a die cut.
Right.
And then they, you know, fold and glue. So I disassembled the box, laid it on my floor, took an overhead shot of it, put it in Photoshop, shrunk it down and printed it out.
Really?
And I put it on other materials so that it would be, you know, like cardboard on the inside, printed on the outside. Right. There was more finesse to it than that. But really, it is an exact scale down of their exact box folded exactly where it folds.
That's awesome.
It was a pleasure. That was really fun.
I mean,
fun.
It looked like it. It really did look like the exact box. So
that was a good time.
That was awesome. Anyway, I want to get you going on time, but what is next? If you can share, what's something that you are really looking forward to coming out shortly or revealing shortly or anything you're working on right now that you're excited to share?
So the Tiny Doors birthday party is coming.
Nice.
It'll be in Little Five Points. It's turning 5 years old.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm really excited about that. And I'm also working on a book that's almost done. So
amazing.
I'm excited to share that too.
Awesome. Congratulations. I can't wait to, well, I'll be at the party if there's invites sent out.
Absolutely.
And I can't wait to read the book whenever
yeah,
that comes out.
Thank you. It's a children's book. I'm really stoked to have it be something that, you know, we can share with another generation.
Beautiful. I love it. And I like children's books as
me too.
Even as an adult. So
yeah, totally.
I will read it. But before we get you going, tell the world out there who doesn't already know, which if you don't know, you're insane if you live in Atlanta, but where can people find you? Where can people find Tiny Doors? And if you had to send somebody to one door, if they've never seen a Tiny Door, you had to send somebody to one door to admire and to get the up close and personal experience, which door would that be?
Mm. So Tiny Doors ATL, you can find on Facebook and Instagram and on the website. I recommend starting with the Instagram. That's the place where you're going to find the most sort of in-depth and cool stuff that's happening, teasers. And then I think if I had to send you somewhere to see the first one, I would send you to the Rainbow Door, door number 2 on the Beltline, because it's the place where you're the most likely to meet people who love that door or who can tell you a story about it. And I think the best part of this project is meeting your neighbors and then you guys using your imagination together, talking about, you know, your experiences and what's important to you. I think it's the least lonely place to experience a Tiny Door. I also recommend door number 1 because it currently has augmented reality that was done by Lotus Eaters Club. So you can hold your phone up to it and see some really cool animation, which, you know, it's rare that street art contains augmented reality. So that's just something that I absolutely love.
Yeah, I saw you post a video of that on your Instagram, which was very cool.
Thank you.
But yeah, definitely go check that out. Karen Anderson, former punk rocker, creator of...
Once a punk rocker, always a punk rocker.
Always a punk rocker. Punk rocker, creator of Tiny Worlds, igniter of imaginations, author of children's books. Just overall, really cool, badass person. Really honored to have had this experience with you and hope to do it again in some fashion at some point in the future.
That sounds great. It's a pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you. Thank you for listening to another episode of the Show ATL Podcast, the podcast where we seek to find and highlight Atlanta creatives and creators and tell the stories of the people and organizations making amazing things in our city. I am your host, Parsa Benamory. Our show today was produced by Mr. Coleman Erkins with help from myself and Corrigan Nolan. Our music is produced by Relax with Alex. I want to thank all of the guests who come onto this program and tell their amazing stories with us and share with us, as well as to our wonderful listeners who continue to support us week in and week out. If you love this episode, if you love this show as a whole, if you like Show ATL and consider it something that you listen to frequently, please consider giving us a 5-star rating or a nice review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or whatever else you use to listen to your podcasts. Please consider supporting us if you care to. Again, we're a small team working to put together this show for you every week. And we have a Patreon page. It's www.patreon.com/showATL. You can give a one-time donation or a recurring donation. All funds will be used to make this show better and better and better for you. So we would greatly appreciate that. Thank you again for listening. Thank you again for supporting us. Thank you again for being a part of the conversation that we continue to have day in and day out to make our city a better place, a more creative place. We will catch you next time. Thank you. Goodbye. We'll be right back.